The new book, Crash and Burn, focuses on different moments in comedian Artie Lang's life, examining in horrifying and often hilarious detail how drugs ruined his career, his intimate relationships, and nearly severed his relationship with his own family. He digs deep into his past, critically analyzing his life, pinpointing his descent into the hellish throes of addiction, hitting rock bottom, and the ultimate journey to redemption. The name of the new book, which follows up Too Fat to Fish, is Crash and Burn, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Artie Lang to the roundtable. Thanks very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate you.
After Too Fat to Fish, you, before all of this stuff happened, which we'll talk about, you were going to write another book, but obviously this took a very different turn.
Yeah, Too Fat was successful enough for me to get another deal. I got the deal right away, and the first payment of the advance was 200 G's. They gave that to me, and I promptly spent that. And then after that, all this happened. I tried to kill myself. I went to a rehab, a mental institution, and after I got out of the first couple of them, 4 months later, my book agent called me up and said, listen, you're not working, I know, and this is horrible news, but you got to pay back that 200 G's if you don't write this book. And I'm like, well, it's a great country. I built up an entire career, saved some money, and now it's going. And that's what hit me in my head. I said, it's all crashing and burning. And I said, give me a while. I'll get better and write it. But I'll write about this because maybe it'll be therapeutic. People might be interested in it. Maybe it'll help people. And it took another year. But I got better and called Anthony Boza, wrote the book.
Who you wrote the last book with is great. You talk about the crash and burn analogy, and so are you're in the point now where you're coming out of the ashes, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I came out of the ashes a while ago. I've been, you know, back to work. My career was there when I came out of rehab, thank God. After a year and a half, I was real lucky. I got another gig hosting a show that's become my own show now on DirecTV and radio in this huge man cave that they built for me downtown, DirecTV on the Audience Network on Channel 239. They've been great to me. And I'm in the third year of a three-year deal, and I've been touring with my stand-up act that's going to be a new special for the last 2 years, and wrote this book now and have it come out for the last couple of years. So I've been working my ass off, and I feel like I've been good for a while. You know, I have good and bad days, but, you know, hey, I was able to come back. I'm lucky.
Does a comedian find funny right away? I mean, and through this, I mean, you try to take your own life. So, I mean, coming out of that, do you find that pretty quick, or does it take a while?
What, funny?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for me in life, you know, I was always kind of a class clown and stuff. Until I was 14, I wanted to be the shortstop for the New York Yankees, and I realized that wasn't going to happen. And after that, I never went through a period where I wanted to be a doctor, a lawyer, a cop, a fireman, none of that. I immediately wanted to be in comedy. And it always kind of came naturally to me. But when you get in the business side of it and grow up and life happens, some stuff could go wrong. And I dealt with it like an idiot by doing drugs. Drugs led to hard drugs, and one of them was heroin. And you can't stay happy on heroin. You just can't. It won't let anybody stay happy. Whether you're a rock star, comic, or plumber, it doesn't matter. That just led to the worst, you know, and took all the funny and the good times away.
You write in the book that December, without any hesitation, you can say that December 9th, 2009 was and will always be one of the saddest days of my life. And I want to talk about that as to why. But, you know, we saw you in concert here in Albany at the Palace Theater about 7 days prior to that, about a week and a half prior to that.
Right.
And you talk in the book about you don't even remember those dates of those last shows.
You know, I remember playing Albany a bunch of times. I remember playing the Egg Theater in Albany a bunch of times. I don't remember it a week before that happened. Was it at the Egg?
No, you were at the Palace. And you were saying, like you say in the book, about those last dates, you knew you had to do them, but you were just out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I know the last gig I did was probably right after that, because the last time I was on stage was at a theater in Montclair, New Jersey, before all this happened. I was supposed to be in San Diego December 11th, and I remember I had to cancel that, and I'm still dealing with the promoter over that. I really said to myself about that San Diego gig, because it was flying across country and coming back, I had to make a decision where this is life or death. I really thought if I went on that trip to San Diego, I would have died. Like, I never had that feeling before, but I really had a premonition, like, I'm going to die. That's how bad I am if I get on that plane. So those last couple of gigs were hard to get through. I'm ashamed that I canceled even one of them, but, you know, you try to do it for the fans and lay it all out there on the stage, but I was in rough shape. That was towards the end.
And when you got to December 9th and the meltdown that was on the air, and you write about it in the book, and it's a harrowing chapter, because I mean, obviously you're going through what you're going through physically and mentally, and also this great concern of letting down a bunch of people, but at the top of the list, Howard Stern, who meant so much to you.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, when you become a heroin addict, you let people down. And the worst person that I could have let down was Howard. That really made me feel terrible because he did so much for me. I mean, the guy gave me another part of my career, which was the biggest part of my career. He was so good to me in every way. And, you know, for 7 years, stuff was amazing. But that last year and a half, when the heroin got bad, it was terrible. And, you know, there's some stuff you can never apologize enough for. But unfortunately, you know, most things with me, it had to be like this dramatic public thing. On December 9th, I went into the show so screwed up, was spilling drinks. And finally, I had to be talked to go get better. And that's what happened. And then the rest is all just stuff that's typical me, unfortunately.
When the time finally came for them to say, okay, enough, because they were worried about you and they wanted you to go get better, and that was December 9th, and then just 20 days later or so, you tried to take your own life. And I assume that 20 days is just trying to figure out what the hell's going on, right, of how bad it was.
Well, yeah, I mean, in those 20 days, I went to rehab because they asked me to. I went out to Long Island to rehab, and I was supposed to stay 28 days, and typical me again, I stayed only 8. I basically broke out of that place, drove home, went on a 5-day binge with everything you could imagine, from pills to booze to heroin. When I ran out, it was January 2nd, 2010. The sun was coming up, and it was the worst feeling ever. I was like, oh, my God, now what? I ruined my life. And I was under the influence of all that stuff still. And I said, I can't live like this anymore, and decided to hurt myself. And then that's where I was at.
And, I mean, ultimately, I mean, you talk about this in the book, and I find it interesting. I'm not trying to focus on it to be exploitive, but only to get an idea of where you were. And that was, to you, it wasn't killing yourself. It was just trying to relieve the pain and get the blood out of you.
Yeah, but as I wrote the book, which was like a therapy session, I realized that wasn't the case. I realized I had to be honest with myself. And the fans reading the book, that I was looking to die in that state that I was in. And the only reason they didn't commit me for longer was because I was under the influence of drugs. Yeah, that's the first thing they ask you with a suicide attempt. You know, because if you're thinking straight, you got real problems. If you're under the influence of drugs, they think it's fixable, and thank God it was. But, yeah, I was a lie to myself, and at the end of the book, I come clean. And I could have went back and changed the chapter, but I thought this would be a more interesting way to write it, to see how therapy you change, and that change can be helpful.
At what point were you comfortable going back on stage and talking about, even in a comedic sense, of what had happened to you?
Very difficult, although, like me, typical crazy comic, I couldn't wait to get on stage and talk about it, because I had some stuff that I thought was really, really funny. I know my audience. I thought they'd like it. Stories about being away and nutty stories, dark stories that I think they'd like. So it was fun to get on stage the first time and try them out, see what worked, what didn't. And it almost all worked, and thank God for my audience, because they gave me the love of laughing and came back, and I made some money. It was harder writing the book, because that's a serious way. There's a lot of funny stuff in the book, but it's way more serious than a stand-up act, obviously.
Yeah. You know, that audience, and I guess much of it a Howard Stern audience, your audience, certainly they give it back to you, but there is a lot of love there.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, ultimately, it's like a big dysfunctional family. That's what it is. You know, you go crazy, you hate each other, this happens, that happens, you piss each other off, but then at the end, you love each other and you support each other, and that's what they've always done. I cherish the relationship I have with the fans I made through Howard, because they're radio fans and they're as intimate as you get. You know, in a way, for almost a decade, I drove to work with them every morning, and now I'm putting them to bed at night with my show. It's like an intimate thing. It's more, you know, I've had fans just through television shows and movies and stand-up and even books. It's not like a radio show. It just isn't. It's an intimate thing, and it's a real friendship. Almost like a cousin would have family.
Yeah.
And that's what's been with my comeback. They've been great.
And as far as your relationship with the people at the Stern Show, I mean, you read a little bit about this, but of course the fans always want to know, and I heard somebody call up on the wrap-up show just 2 days ago wondering if you were going to be on to talk about the book. It's certainly something that I guess people obviously want to know if you would ever return in one way or another, even as a guest.
I hope one day we could sit down and have closure and talk about that, but right now it's not the time, and I agree with that. You know, Howard's in a terrible position that I put him in. You know, if I go back there and something triggers that makes me relapse, how are they going to feel? What's going to happen? You know, and he doesn't want that to happen. And I think he's being a good guy in the sense that nothing's more important than me staying okay. Not a talk show appearance, not ratings, not me plugging the book. And that's how he's standing with it, and I agree with him.
Yeah.
So as time passes by, maybe, but right now he doesn't feel it's right, and I think that's a class move. So I'm not going to press it.
Do you have closure with other friends there, of people on the staff, of personal closure?
Oh, yeah. Since I've gone off the air, I've talked to everyone there, including Howard. And yeah, finally we're cool. I've apologized to everybody for what happened, and they're real friendly, man. They're good people, and they're happy I'm okay. And, yeah, I just saw a bunch of them the other night. I went out to dinner with a bunch of guys from the show. So it's great to still have them in my life.
And you like this balance of doing a show at night and going out on the road and still doing the comedy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm at the age of 46, it's not as fun traveling at 26. I'm not going to lie to you. And with my gut, these plane chairs need to be bigger. But, you know, stand-up is still the purest form of entertainment. You just need a mic and you get on stage and you go. A lot of comics will tell you, I mean, we're proud that, you know, you don't need a bunch of equipment, you don't need instruments, you don't need bells and whistles if you're a true comic. You just need a mic that works and you can entertain people for an hour, get some money and leave. You know, it's a great thing to be able to do, and I love it.
Going through something so traumatic, does it make you sharper? I mean, you're on stage now sober. Does that make you sharper?
Yes, without question. It's not even close. I'm not one of these guys who thought he needed drugs and booze to get funnier. I never needed them in the beginning of my career when I became a working actor and professional and became sort of famous on Stern. I always was on air and on TV and working in movies and writing sober, completely sober. That just came on later in the game, and it made me worse. You know, it made me worse. Now I'm better. Now I'm even better than I was before it all happened, because, you know, I'm more of a pro than I've been doing it a while, and to be sober with this experience is the best of both worlds, I think, and I think I'm doing my best work.
Well, the name of the book is Crash and Burn. It is published by Touchstone. Artie, I would think it would be very tough to get on the air and talk about this over and over again. And I just thank you so much for all the laughs and giving us the time this morning. And it's just great to have you with us.
I know, man. You made this painless, buddy. I appreciate the time. Believe me, you're doing me the favor.
Thanks very much. Artie Lang is the author of Crash and Burn. The book is published by Touchstone. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.